Unity is strength and assured success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, going out on AM, FM stations all around the world, live from the fabulous chained island nation of New Zealand, full of fluoride heads and poisonous food, poisonous soil, poisonous air, and poisonous politicians to boot. It's a fabulous little country. And we just love tyranny down here, which is why we get along so well with our American brethren who apparently love tyranny so much that they keep re-electing them. My very special guest today is an expert, if you will, on just being really, really cool and being active and getting stuff done. Her name is Lisa Prager. She joins us now from New Zealand.
Hi, Vinny.
Can you please break down for the listeners, Lisa, just a little bit about your background, who you are, and then, of course, we'll start rolling into what you're getting up to now.
Sure, thanks. Yep. Well, my family immigrated to New Zealand in the very early 60s, and I grew up here. And, of course, like most people, fell in love with a clean, green image. The only problem was, is as I grew up, I began to realise we weren't quite as clean and weren't quite as green as we all wanted to fantasise we were. And that journey for me took me through, you know, all sorts of activities and into local politics, mainly because after being involved in the anti-nuclear movement in New Zealand and, you know, watching us being able to stand up, you know, to the American war machine and basically say no nukes in our waters, I realised that we had to sort of act local if we really wanted to influence things globally. And so that's really where I position myself is constantly, I suppose, being the watchdog on what's happening in our local government, which, of course, connects to our central government, which connects to the global government. So it's kind of wherever you start, you're going to find some dirt.
Everything leads upwards, kind of like Jack and the Beanstalk. One thing that really kind of F's me off about this, though, is that the idea of doing things local in order to influence the global, one thing happens in Japan, and all the campaigning about a nuclear-free Pacific or anything like that all gets wiped away in a second.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I couldn't be more shocked at the lack of media coverage, the lack of in-depth analysis. I mean, what I think's happened in the tsunami in Japan is a global catastrophe, but I don't hear one word where people are actually going, this is it, we've really screwed it up. I mean, the Japanese seem really keen to just sweep it under the carpet and tidy it all up. But the truth is the implications of what's happened is not only with us, but it'll be with us for thousands of years. And it really is a call for the world to look at its entire energy needs. I mean, it's only 100 years since we've been plugging in our lights, our stoves, our air conditioning, our heat pumps. And when you really start to analyze it, we're the ones who are driving this obscene desire for more and more energy. And indeed, we all need to look at ourselves and what our consumption really has to be. So, yeah, the thing in Japan is big and it needs to start being talked about. You know, you've got to applaud the Germans for looking at their own nuclear power plants and attempting to close them down. But the truth is, until we really get wise about how we're driving this planet, and what's really going on. We're in dire straits, and I'm sure I'm not the only person who's mentioned that before.
The whole dire straits issue, it's... Have you noticed this kind of crisis after crisis after crisis? Because looking at the nuclear issue, I mean, when the people stood up, said, no, we don't want no nuclear crap anywhere near us, not even US ships who would neither confirm nor deny whether or not they had nuclear-powered engines, which would have made the entire issue a non-issue, basically. But yeah, the difficulty, of course, is that now it's come out, even in TV3 News, that yellow cake uranium's been getting shipped through New Zealand for the last 20 years.
Oh, totally, man. I mean, we as a culture globally are so dishonest. We're so dishonest with what we're doing. We're so dishonest with how we're polluting the environment. We're so dishonest to what, you know, what is going to impact on our grandchildren that, you know, you can't help but stand on the sidelines and go, hey, well, if it all goes up in one big puff, we kind of deserve it. And that makes me incredibly sad because essentially humans are good. But it seems like we are easily led by sheep. It seems like the powers of evil love to manifest in this exploitative, money-grabbing, greedy behavior. And it's not like we don't know about it. It just seems like we are immobilized, that we continue to vote governments in who say one thing and do the other. We don't punish these people. We consistently basically pat them on the head, give them a golden handshake and say, on your way. And so until, I suppose, globally, ordinary people stand up and go, you know, you don't allow us to behave like this and we're not going to allow you to behave like this, then we're going to just keep going around in the same little, you know, rat, whirly carnival of nonsense. And it is nonsense. We know how to manage this planet. We know how to manage the resources. We know exactly what needs to be done to create a form of stability. And yet we still allow the powers of greed and corruption to run through the veins of this whole structure.
Yeah, well, I think it's up to those who aren't part of that whole structure to actually act as its active enemies. What I mean, they treat us with complete and utter contempt. This is how much contempt they've got for us. On the news last night, the solution to the Japanese nuclear disaster will be, wait for it, a polystyrene dome.
Well, you know, it goes back to duck and cover. You know, just hop under a desk and everything will be all right. I mean, how absurd is that? You know, really, Japan, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, you know, steaming out gas-guzzling cars should be closed down. Bottom line. And it should all be, you know, all energy should be put into stopping this catastrophe. I mean, I don't know where all the other countries of the world are. They just seem to be covering their eyes and hiding under their desks. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, we had reports in from, what was it called, Massachusetts, I believe. They had 161 times the normal amount of radioactive iodine in it. And now it's come out that it's something like 10,000 times the normal legal level around the Fukushima plant, you know, in the 20 to 100 kilometres, you know, and goodness knows how much it is after that. And it's getting up there all over the US. It has basically already done a ring around the world, this big, huge cloud that covers basically the entire northern hemisphere and is coming now slightly into the southern hemisphere, has, in my opinion, contaminated the entire Pacific Ocean, or most of it already. So I'm not eating any fish, and I'm advising people not to eat any fish for like the next 18 months to a year. Okay.
Absolutely, and guess what? It isn't 18 months to a year. You basically aren't going to be able to. And, you know, this, you want to know why the cancer rates are going through the roof in the world? Just look at the food chain. It's really so simple. I'm astounded that it's allowed to continue. And this whole thing about, you know, regulation, essentially, you know, until everyone wakes up and realizes it's impacting them immediately, then, well, we're screwed.
Yeah. I have come to terms with it. All right, seriously. I have just kind of come to terms with the fact, yep, when I have kids, they'll be deformed, and I'll die a lot younger with cancer. You know, it's just my ticket in life.
You know, Vinny, no, I don't accept that. You know, I just accept that it's never too late. And I think that these are just small little wake-up calls, and that we're an incredibly robust organism, a bit like rats. You know, yeah, sure, it'll knock out X million. But the bottom line here is this global genocide, and I have to say, I have to agree that it seems to be a kind of intentional form of behavior, because no one in their right mind with the amount of knowledge we have, with the amount of technology we have, with the amount of inputs we have, would let this go on unless they had a vested interest in genocide. And the bottom line is, that's currently what's going on. And so, you know, calling it out as it is one way of slowing the process. I don't think one should ever give in. I mean, I'm Jewish. And if I take any lesson from the past and the 20th century was never give in. You know, when the forces of evil are upon you, you know, you might not make it through, but never give up. And that's got to be the bottom line. That's why we're talking here today, to try and bring some kind of lift in the consciousness globally to go, hey, you know, even if you just chat with the people around you, you'd be amazed at how powerful that message becomes as it becomes amplified by millions and millions of people. So, don't give up, buddy.
Well, you know, I haven't given up. I've just seen the end, you know, and it's like, well, now I can do as much as I can between now and then.
Well, yeah, that's kind of always been the way it is in life. So, yeah,
exactly. So the way it is in life is same as the way it is when you see your death, you know. Just because you're going to die doesn't mean you should change anything you're doing, because then you wouldn't be living.
You know, it's really funny. I'm kind of pinching myself that we're having this conversation, you know, because I've been an activist for like over 30 years, and we have been banging on the doors and trying to herald these crises for so long that, you know, there is a point at which you go, okay, you suckers, if you really want to bite the bullet, if you really want to take it in the rear end, well, go ahead, because, you know, this is avoidable. All of these things are avoidable, and we don't have to give in to the big almighty dollar. And in fact, it's brought America to its knees, you know, and as an American, I can stand here, you know, on the very edge of the South Pacific and go, oh my goodness, what have you done? And it wasn't that it wasn't coming when we left in the 60s. It's just that, you know, did America have to buy the whole package so spectacularly? Is it okay that the people who brought the latest financial crisis are still in their positions of power? I mean, hey, America, I just want to say, what's going on with you? Are you all sleepwalking? Are you all poisoned? Are you all brainwashed that you can't kick back and go, enough's enough? It just seems a very peculiar reality. Zealand and observe it all these years later.
Well, New Zealand's far enough behind to be a little bit ahead. I think that our country is going in the same direction, you know. It's like it's not a random phenomenon. I think it's a progressive phenomenon. The more control consumerism and Madison Avenue and the elite bankers and New World Order folk have over a country, the dumber, the fatter, the lazier, the more slovenly and slave-like the population becomes, because that's how they want to condition everybody through education. They want them to be feeling helpless, looking for a handout, not talking to people, isolating themselves, not taking good care of their health. You know, it's incredibly easy to conquer a population like that because their minds are already conquered. And even the Pentagon said that war, 90% of it, is information control.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and what you said is, has hit the nail on the head, which is kind of why I keep barking about, you know, local government. I cannot believe in New Zealand that we have bought the American model to the point where, you know, we've just had an amalgamation of our local councils. And the irony was they sold it to us as it would be more efficient, more productive, and better for the public. And in truth, all it means is that the old boys network in charge have simply got out their spanners and have tightened all the bolts, strengthened their position, and have a tighter grip on public assets than ever. And it's funny that you bring this up, because this was the essence of one of the things I was telling you about, that I went to a board meeting for one of our council-controlled organisations, which has morphed from being a public institution into a limited liability company. And they have sucked up over $900 million of public assets, and they're quietly going about the process of disposing of them to their friends and their associates. And it's so out in the open. You know, just Google any one of the six board members from Sir John Wells down, and you find ex-councillors with their fingers in the honeypot.
Have you got a list there, Lisa, that you could read out? Because I'm actually interested to know the details.
Oh, sure. Well, okay, I'll make it real simple on this one. It's the Auckland Council Property Limited, and that's the CCO. Now, I just want to point out to listeners, the limited liability company is basically a private company. You know, I own a limited liability company and run my cafe. Nobody can do anything with those assets whatsoever.
So, and we'll talk. Oh, sorry. Unfortunately, we're going off to break. We'll have to get into this after it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My remarkably fabulous special guest is Lisa Prager, coming at us live from the contaminated coffee lounge. And we'll be right back in the South Pacific Slave Nation. Of the evil scumbaggery types that rule this city. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. A very special guest, Lisa Prager, joins us from a fabulous old cafe. And is it Grey Lynn now or Westmere?
Well, it's Westmere. It's Garnet Station Cafe on Westmere. We've just hit 100 people on our Facebook side for Garnet Station because of Verity's silly dances. So if you've got nothing better to do with your life, you don't have any political issues you need to deal with today, just jump on Garnet Station on Facebook and check us out. It's quite fun.
Yeah, yeah. Cuss out your opponents. Now, we were talking about how inexorably, if you wind up becoming a person of a title, for example, a dame, or in this case, a sir, then the likelihood becomes that you've in some way helped to destroy this country. And Sir John Wells is an interesting character, chairman of Bancorp Treasury Services Limited, made a lot of money in the 80s, and also now is the official Rugby World Cup dude, has some other political ties as well. And Lisa has even more information on him, because when it comes to the sirs, sir, right, this guy's going to rape your country.
Well, it's just really shocking. You know, I naively stumbled into this board meeting because I wanted to know who the Auckland Council Property Limited was, and the thing that set my light bulb going was limited. I mean, there's no way that any part of our council or, you know, public governance should be a limited liability company, because it makes you impervious. It means you can do whatever you want. And so when I discovered that Sir John Wells was the chairman, I did a bit of research, and I was astounded to find that he had connections in the consultancy industry, in the insurance industry. And when you start to look at the network of people involved, you start to go, oh, They've got it all sewn up. They have a finger inside the council. They know what's going to happen before anyone else does. They are aware of what properties are going to be disposed of, so they can tell their mates to talk to the real estate people who have got the contract. And on it goes before you go, hey, it's a whole load of insider trading. And that's what I think's going on at the Auckland Council Property Limited. I'm going to just run through a few more of their names in case anybody out there wants to Google them. We've got a Richard Aitken. He's the deputy chair. We've got a Lee Orton. Now, he's interesting. He was an ex-Manukau city councillor. Well, suddenly, if you Google him, you find he's got his own private consultancy. He's involved in developments out in South Auckland, and he's more than happy to assist you with your project. I mean, come on, people. He's sitting on a board administrating over $900 million worth of commercial and residential public assets. What the heck's he doing with his own private company to assist you to figure it all out? We've then got Neil Barr. Anne Blackburn, now she's very interesting, you know. She goes all the way back to New York. And that's what made me realise, you know, this isn't a coincidence. This is a giant network of people in the know who are all part of the same club. And the club is suck it cheap out of the public ownership and put it in your pocket for big profits. And that's the bottom line here. And honestly, we are so sweet and naive in New Zealand. You know, once they've done all this, we're the ones cleaning up after going, oh, did they just do that? And on this particular board meeting, on the 13th floor of 191 Queen Street in the Bancorp boardroom, I was astounded that they just opened the back of this document I've got and revealed the first $30 million worth of public assets that they're flogging off, including a street in Newmarket to Westfield so they can park their rubbish bins there, houses in Sandringham, houses in Avondale, you know, empty land all over the place. And here's the irony, is not one of these people has talked to the community council groups to go, hey, do you need a house for any of your resident artists? Do you need a place for underprivileged mums to meet? It's just like, hey, boys, log it off. And throughout this document, unashamedly, big red words, confidential content removed, confidential content removed. Hey, these guys aren't a private company running their own business. Well, they shouldn't be. But they say, we're not going to provide this information to the public because it could be detrimental. Well, hello, we own these friggin' companies and they are locking us out. So, you know, I can't speak more highly of blowing the whistle on this ridiculous new council we've created in Auckland, New Zealand, the great super city, which is really just a great big fat super ripoff if you know who to know and you know what to do with who you know.
They are the old boys network. These guys are all puppets though. Okay. It's all just a higher plan. This is all set out in Agenda 21 that was written and signed in 1992, the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit. It was signed on Prince Charles's yacht, and I think it was Jim Bolger, our Prime Minister at the time, signed it. So did George H.W. Bush, the President of the United States. Okay, and it all pledges to basically privatize everybody's assets and to destroy industrial agriculture and get humanity into a semi-feudal state again. Move everybody off of the farmland and everything like that, and just pack them and stack them into smart growth cells in the middle of cities. So they need total corporate control of all the cities so that they can run everything the way that they want it designed and manifested. And that's exactly what's happening here. And even in Hamilton, it's happening there too. They now have, and for no reason really at all, parking ticket places everywhere so that every movement you make, every form of independence you have, costs money. So it inevitably drives everybody into a destitute kind of subhuman form. You know?
Oh, you're right. You know, it's as insidious as the fact that this government in New Zealand, the John Key's government, has driven us into debt, like as fast and as hard as he can, because the easiest thing to do is not to then go through a privatisation process, but to just call in the IMF, the World Bank, to take control of your public assets. And this is, of course, what you're going to see happen in Greece and in Portugal. And here's the big irony. This is the formula in order to destroy a country. You first of all make it put on a large sporting event, or you cajole it, or you make it, such as the Greek Olympics. And in their enthusiasm to meet world standards, they overspend and become bankrupt. And then the IMF bails them out. And then in bailing them out, they turn around and say, well, we'll bail you out on condition you just hand us over all of your public assets and infrastructure. I mean, it just is as obvious as a comic strip. And guess what? It's coming to us. The Rugby World Cup is nothing more than that exact same bankrupting process. And that's why I find it so interesting that Sir John Wells is not only the head of Auckland Council Property Limited, but he's also the head of the Rugby World Cup gig. And obviously, from my perspective in New Zealand, he's one of the puppet masters. But you're dead right. Behind this particular New Zealand puppet master are some even bigger global public masters. And, you know, maybe what we should do is, instead of, you know, reiterating what we now know, is figure out our strategy of how we're going to deal with these guys. I mean, the French Revolution just walked them over the guillotine and cut their heads off. It was really simple.
Yes, well, I've always been a fan of hanging them myself, you know, in a ceremonial type fashion after all their crimes have been read out to them just then. And the public think, kind of like Mussolini did, you know, how everybody spat on his hanging corpse. That's how I'd like to see our government issues resolved, you know. Hang him, boy, hang him.
Well, you know, there's got to be some deterrent. I mean, the fact that they act with such impunity. I mean, when I stood in this board meeting
They've got all the judges in their back pockets.
Oh, I know. But let me tell you this. This was a very telling comment from Sir John Wells. At the end of the board meeting, I turned to him in front of everyone and I just said, look, Sir John, just out of curiosity, can you explain to me why we're having this meeting related to Auckland City Council in your boardroom? And he sat back in his chair and laughed and said, oh, yes, of course. It's more convenient for me. And that was it. That's when I knew we had them in the bag. Because, you know, it was more convenient for him for the disposal of these properties out of his own office than to trot down to City Hall and be exposed to the wrath of the great unwashed.
Oh, yeah. Well, the irony is that, well, I suppose there's no irony here, is it? It's just straight gangsterism.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, honestly, there couldn't be, it's mafioso. Like, honestly, it makes you feel like this should be some description of a drum beat or a Sicilian lute playing in the background, you know?
Well, that we can arrange. Hey, you know, I'm just looking at this page too, and under, you know, Anne Blackburn, I mentioned before, and Tukurangi Morgan, who was obviously the Maori component in this picture. Then in attendance was, guess who? Not only Mr. David Rankin, the ex-chief CEO of Auckland City. I mean, can you imagine how he must be gloating to have sucked up the biggest bag of assets of all and is slowly in the process of getting rid of him? And then this guy, this makes me really laugh. His name is Clive Fuhrer. And he's in charge of manager of acquisitions and disposals.
Oh, I mean, my Jura!
I know. I mean, I couldn't even write a script this good that had all these crazy characters in it, you know. You know, Peter Woodhead, manager of finance and risk. Well, what's the frickin' risk? They've taken everything. They're flogging it at whatever price they want. It's just sort of like a bad game, really. I feel like I'm inside somebody's computer game, really. Then also, this is really hot. I mean, this is just page one. I'm not even going to bore you with the next 130 pages. But it says also in attendance was Mark Bayfield. He's a contractor to Auckland Council Property, which means that he probably used to work for the council, but, you know, now he's just re-employed on three times the amount of money. Evan Davis and Tom hooray of Todd Properties Limited. Well, look up Todd Properties and just drive yourself nuts on what they've been involved in with the last 5 years. Then we've got David Gibbs. He's the director of Construct. It's an architectural firm. And then half a dozen other contractors, all of whom are part of this consultancy family to write the report the council wants, to do what it wants, and irregardless of the truth. It's just garbage in and garbage out. So, you know, hey, I think it's really simple. People should just stop paying their rates, stop paying their taxes. Just stop paying them, full stop. I mean, wouldn't that shock the bejesus out of them?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, other than that, the grand idea that I had was to just, you know, march up to council offices while they're in the middle of session and just grab them all and throw them out in the street and just say, you're not allowed in here. You've been naughty. We're running the show now.
you know, hey, it's not so stupid. I mean, this is the thing in New Zealand, we're so polite. You know, in the Arab states, they just all pile into the local square and throw them out. Well, except in Gaddafi's case. But, you know, everybody knows he should have been dealt to 100 years ago. But, no, you know, America just happened to just have to support him, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Gaddafi is that he was he's one of the few countries in the world that have their own sovereign bank, and the government-owned oil companies that share profits with the people. And he was about to start trading gold for oil, and it would have completely revolutionized the currency markets, just like Iraq, incidentally, wanted to stop trading in US dollars as well and start trading oil in euros instead. Oh, look what happened there. So it's basically, as far as I'm concerned, the same old story, and it's now come out that Al-Qaeda is actually on the side of the rebels. And, of course, CIA is supporting the rebels. Because, you know, they own Al-Qaeda as well.
You know, it's just, oh, my God. Is this the making of a large carry-on comedy, you know? Just carry on around the world. And, you know, it's ironic when we talk about it this way and it's in front of quite a large audience of people, you can't help but go, golly, the dots have all been joined up and all roads lead back to the same place.
Yeah, it's like you get to the point where you're so disillusioned that you automatically begin to assume that everything that you hear in the news is part of a New World Order plot, and the worst part is, it is!
Yeah, well, my theory there is just turn the friggin' news off. You know, it's really simple, especially with all the new media. There's no excuse for being sucked into to all of this. I mean, what I find amazing about the news is the news happens, and every time I turn it up, they're covering some old story of completely no value. I mean, honestly, why do we need to hear about murders? Why do we need to hear about the unfortunate conflict between a few individuals when these other things are just so ginormous? They're the issues that really should be played with.
That's right. Don't pluck the leaves. Cut out the root of that big macrocarpa tree, boy. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My remarkably special guest is Lisa Prager, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, The Lighter Side of Genocide, broadcasting live from the future, from the fabulous fluoride head capital in Auckland. My remarkably special guest, Lisa Prager, joins us as well. Now, we wanted to at the end of the show, we're talking about, you know, how depressing it all is, but how freaking hilarious I find it. Now, maybe I'm a little bit mad, and I'll probably say that's quite correct. You know, I've done a rational process, and I've decided rationally to be mad because there is so much madness out there that you can't fight it. You have to embrace it. All right? So well, I'm a mad lover. I'm a mad fighter. I'm a mad talker. I'm a mad everything. So basically, if anybody wants to try and shut me up, you know, go right ahead, mate. Have your say. I'll listen to you. And if you're right, I'll start, you know, listening to you more. It's that simple.
Well, it is. It is that simple, Vinny. And the funny thing about it really is, if you didn't laugh, you'd cry. And you know, just on the break, I mentioned to you that you know, in this council document I'm looking at under acquisitions and disposal update report, we've got Clive Furrer introduced a new project involving a brief to Auckland Council on the commercial terms and issues associated with the council's option to purchase from Cooper and Companies a 50% interest in 1,200 car park spaces at the Britomart redevelopment.
I mean, by chance, do any of these companies have connections to mining, as in Mine Führer?
Ah! I'm sure it's a bit like the Auckland Plan. It's got big relationships with the Third Reich and what they tried to do. I just kind of keep marveling at the fact that they're not trying to make more parks or playgrounds or free kindergartens. They want to buy car parks and make more money so that they can pocket even more whilst they fleece us on a daily basis. I mean, and it's just, you know, how could you possibly create a document that all you do is go, you know, so-and-so is going to make a report, but it's been removed for confidential content reasons. I mean, what's the point? Why don't you just go, we're a secret society, we're in the process of stealing all your public assets, so just sit down, shut up, and let us get on with it.
Yeah, well, this isn't just happening in New Zealand, though. It's happening frickin' everywhere. Trans-Texas Corridor is a good example of this. You know, the government just came in and just took everybody's land, and they're going to basically wind up tolling the whole road, even though the taxpayers paid for it, for another 50 years to a offshore company from Spain. You know, and this is a massive, massive project, and they get to keep tolling the road even after their costs have been met.
Well, this is interesting, you know, because one of the questions I have for America, which is, as thousands of people are being thrown out of their homes and they're locked up, and we see pictures here of entire deserted suburbs, you know, why don't people just do what they do in Britain, which is squat? Which is just go and take them over. Don't pay anything. Just occupy them. You know, is the threat of someone coming and blowing your head off the thing that keeps them out of there? I mean, all over Britain, people squat in places that are disused or abandoned or you know, are waiting some kind of redevelopment. It's a cultural activity. But Americans seem to have just gone, oh, okay, I'm locked out. Bye. It's weird.
Yeah, and that was the one thing that really made me sad, was when I saw all the tent cities that are popping up all over America, something like 40 million homeless now. and it's like the thing that occurred to me is that what kind of spirit-crushing event could have happened to so many people that they would all sit together and commiserate rather than stand up together and fight back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe that's the whole kind of, you know, the Western revolution that hasn't occurred. I mean, you know, maybe the middle class has to suffer before they're prepared to stand up. But, you know, historically, during the French Revolution, you know, it wasn't really thousands of years of oppression. It was just, you know, the final straw that broke the camel's back, as everyone moved out of the country into the cities and were living in such, I suppose, difficult and intensive circumstances, they just erupted. And I mean, you know, I suppose that's what they're planning for as well, how to control the eruption, because it's going to come, whether it's here in little old New Zealand or whether it's in downtown Washington.
Mm. Well, downtown Washington, which is incidentally modelled on a pentagram.
Oh, yes, I hadn't quite made that connection.
Yeah, well it's like You see a little bit of Satan in everything when you know what symbolism they use. You know, all the major corporations are either sun worship or worship of the devil or something occult like that. You know, Caltex, for example, five pointed star, pentagram, and it's got a little red pyramid in the middle as well. How fabulous is that?
Well, I mean, then you know, the problem here, of course, is the conspiracy theory, and the joke is, hey. There is no conspiracy. They're just doing it. It's just business as usual. And in a way, it's kind of important to demystify it to a degree. As much as I agree that all these symbols are there incarnate, the truth is they're just simply going about the business of enslaving and impoverishing huge numbers of people. And I suppose there's a... Yeah.
In my opinion, they're basically no different to Nazi soldiers carrying their battle standards.
Yeah. Yeah,
massive swastikas. Now, the swastika was actually a symbol of the sun, a symbol of power, but it normally went to the right, whereas the swastika that he used, he actually flipped it around so it's to the left, and for some reason they think it gives you left hand, like black magic, dark magic, or something like that when you reverse symbols. It's like... The whole history of this world is like rooted in the occult, and so therefore it's no surprise to me that you have the worst deceivers, the worst abusers, and the most corrupt and disgusting hellion demons running the country from on high. They would rather rule in hell than live in heaven or serve in heaven, you know?
Well, it's a tragic, I suppose, recognition that we are living in a duality, really, where the fight between good and evil has never been so strong, certainly in my lifetime, you know, or perhaps that's just ignorance. You know, I'm the first to admit this has been going on for centuries. But I think what's different is the great cultural awareness of masses of ordinary people. And for me, that, you know, that's the only answer. It is a form of global revolution of the underdogs to overthrow the very few who are at the top. And, you know, this is the thing. It seems almost like a David and Goliath exercise. But if we know anything about living in New Zealand, is that we are used to the David and Goliath scenario, and we have a cultural history of standing up to Goliath. And I, you know, I want to, you know, end our conversation today by still being strong and optimistic, and that if we keep all of us attempting to reveal the light in every situation, or the truth in every situation, that eventually we will be able to overwhelm the darkness that does undoubtedly appear to be trying to embrace us. And, you know, it's just,
you kind of walk into a room and it's dark, but you switch a light on, the darkness scurries away incredibly quickly, but you can't do the reverse.
Exactly. You know, and it's sort of like, I mean, I think, you know, we've had a couple of these conversations now. I think we had one about a year ago. And it was sort of like we were still trying to a degree, to figure it all out. Well, there's no mystery now. It's pretty clear that however you want to brand them or label them, the occult or the masterclass or the one world order or just the executives at council, it doesn't really matter. The bottom line is that structure is in place, and it's ultimately the dismantling of it for the good of the planet has got to be a goal that comes into our collective consciousness. And, you know, I mean, I'm a peacenik. I believe in peaceful resolution. I believe in, you know, in a Gandhi-like approach. It doesn't mean you sit down and say nothing, but it means that you carry with you at all times that strength, that courage, that knowledge, that ethical core that says whenever I see those forces of evil, be they perpetrated on children or on the elderly, that you speak out about it, that you stop it, that you tell it to go away. And I think that we all, as individuals, forget our power. We are incredibly powerful as individuals, but we are so dumbed down that until we remember who we really are, indeed, you know, God's walking upon this earth in our own right, then we'll constantly be victim to this kind of oppression and slavery. And, you know, we don't have to be, but it's got to be a change in our consciousness, or a change in our way of being, or a change in what we accept. And, you know, ultimately, consumer rules. And, you know, until we accept the responsibility of our actions, then we're doomed.
Nice. Accept responsibility or you're doomed, ladies and gentlemen. You are the guardians of your people. You can defend yourselves and you can also protect others at the same time. And indeed, it is your responsibility to do so. And every moment that you delay, more ill, more harm, more suffering, more rape, more pillage of your country will ensue until you wise up. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My special guest, Lisa Prager, thank you very, very much for joining me.
Thanks, Vinnie. Anytime. Take care.
All right. There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up next hour, if I remember correctly, another fabulous guest, Richard Souder. No idea who he is, but we'll soon find out. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the most fascist 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Or is it AmericanFreedomToFascism.com? And that was one thing that I wanted to talk about on air is that Aaron Russo, man, very, very, very sad to have seen him gone all those years ago. But, you know, the difficulty being, you know, for a New Zealander to have lost a hero of any description is that there's nobody, you know, or at the time, rather, when I first started getting into radio, I didn't know who to replace them with, so I kind of had to do it myself. But in doing it, I found out that there are heroes frickin' everywhere, you know? You only have to look. Some people stay at home and they don't see anything because they're surrounded by walls, you know, both literally and figuratively. And they don't get anything done. And that extends, of course, to the people who sit at home surrounded by four walls with their eyes closed, meditating. I can't for the life of me wonder what exactly you can accomplish by sitting down and doing nothing. Just doesn't ring true to me. But tragic circumstances. For the last 5 days, I've been working on an episode of Mr. News for the new Underground News Network, launching in a week's time. And due to unforeseen circumstances and goodness knows what happened, all of that work has been lost, basically. It's right there. I can see it. I can touch it, but I can't hear it. Everything has gone wrong, and it's just such a terrible thing. I actually really I almost didn't want to come on air today for fear I'd be too upset. Because, it really broke me. It's the thing that happens when you overextend yourself, man. You become very vulnerable. And I realize that as much as the next person, you know, you do have to keep working, though, okay? It doesn't matter how hard stuff gets, okay? You think this is bad? Think what's going to happen tomorrow. It could be even worse. So why don't you just enjoy what the moment holds. That's it. You know? And just keep going. There's too much stuff to do, man. The world is counting on you. And I'm talking to everybody here. Seriously, the world is counting on you here? You're the only one who can save it? Never should you sit down and just take it. You know, at the very least, yell back at the TV. Strike up a conversation with somebody at work that you haven't spoken to before. Find out whether or not they're a truther. The other day I was pulling through a drive-thru and the guy asked me what I wanted for my drink. And I said, do you have anything that doesn't have poison in it? And he goes, well, there's water, but that's got fluoride in it. And I said, you're a truther, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. And this is like a freaking heck, man. We're living everywhere. No, seriously, I cannot go to a dance club. I cannot go to a public park or anything without meeting another truther. It's just so freaky. Really, really freaky. Everybody knows 9/11 is an inside job. Everybody knows global warming's a fraud. Everybody knows vaccines are poisonous. What the heck is going on here? How can everybody know this and nothing be done about it? You know, it's because a lot of people have been conditioned to think that, hey, I'm powerless. I can't accomplish much, you know. Or it's too difficult for me. Or there's too many complications. Or I don't want to overextend myself. Well, it's like doing exercise, mate. Okay? When you want to grow muscle, you have to rip that muscle. Otherwise, it's not going to be able to grow. And such has to be your experience in life. You have to fall down in order to know how to stand up. All right? Life is just an endless series of suffering. Get used to it and get happy about it. Because every single bit of suffering that you go through teaches you how to suffer less tomorrow. If you're paying attention, if you wise up, and just remember that it's not just you, everybody is utterly dependent. Okay? The entire country has been sold out, all the politicians are corrupt. All the mainstream parties are going along with it, even the minor parties. If they're going along with one of the New World Order's agendas, they're going along with the whole thing. That's where I stand on it. You know, some people actually want to are really positive about huge amounts of Chinese influence. And I say, well, I don't want to be racist or anything, so I'm not going to say anything. The difficulty is you can't have conversations with people about things based on race. You can't have conversations with people about religion when you're talking about politics, okay? Because politics is supposed to be about the many, not of the few, okay? Any one particular, and it's not even race anyway. That's just another consult thing that's come out of goodness knows what, to get everybody divided and infighting and whatever, when apparently, and I'm can't sure, I'm not even check my facts on this one, when back in the Bible, after the great flood, Noah and his sons and their wives and everything like that were the ones who wound up repopulating the world, apparently. And then, interestingly enough, geneticists have actually tracked back DNA to seven original mothers for the entire human race. Everybody has a bit of this mitochondrial DNA, okay? We literally are part of the same family of seven sisters or some crap. So when you talk about race, when you talk about the differences, you know, genetically or whatever, the only word that I hear is eugenics, okay? And when, you know, we've got this this big kind of march or whatever happening. This guy's marching against the Chinese influence. Now, there's two things that we can look at there. One, we can either demonize him for discriminating on somebody based upon their particular origin on the earth. You know, that'd be accurate, maybe. Or we can have a look at the underlying issues here. You talk about imperialism. Well, we've suffered under American imperialism through the World Bank and British imperialism through the Bank of England. are incidentally connected. and now what? We want another one? No. This is not a good idea. Okay. Everybody in the world that has a powerful country is trying to extend their country's reach, influence, power, dominance. It's just how it happens. And the only way that they wouldn't threaten you is if you don't let them in at all. You give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk, as the saying goes. You have to take a while to think about that one. They want something to wash it down with, to sweeten the deal. What do you think we've got that they want? We've got a heck of a lot of resources in this country. Why do you think Petrobras is here? Why do you think there's prospecting for oil all up and down our national parks, talking about open cast mining, this, that, and the other, just destroying the landscape of the quote-unquote 100% pure New Zealand in total hypocrisy of everything the image of this country was built up for. Tourism numbers are down already. Goodness knows how much worse they're going to go down. But of course, we can't blame this on our environmental policy. No, our environmental policy has been rife for years. It's basically just the Christchurch earthquake talking, because everybody who goes to the South Island does all the adventure touring and all of that kind of stuff. The Christchurch airport is pretty much your first port of call for the international puppies, which is, you know, fortunately why they've spent huge quantities of money to be the first airport in the world to have a flashing light display of gargantuan proportions all over the frickin' airport to welcome new travellers to the most shaking city in all of New Zealand. That's Christchurch. That's right. Thank you very much. I would think that, you know, if you're going to sell your country to the world, maybe you should actually, have a work on making your image actually true rather than making it flashy. You know, I would think that welcome to Christchurch, your tourist dollar is really appreciated here. You know, welcome to Christchurch, don't go to the eastern suburbs, there's no running water and no electricity. You know? This is months on, of course. Welcome to Christchurch. We have 3,000 earthquakes a day. I'm sure that would get the tourist dollar up, okay? You could have, start a ground surfing craze. I reckon everybody there. I was talking to a guy the other day. He's a surfer and he quite enjoys the earthquakes. You know, he can't wait for another one. Gets to surf the ground, mate. Wouldn't that be a new extreme sport? And I wonder how it'd be interesting to legislate around that, because that's funny, you know. Every sport sort of needs law around it to protect everybody on the field from getting hurt when the whole game is about getting hurt and hurting somebody else. You know, but there's rules. There's only certain ways you can hurt other people. You know, that's an illegal. That's foul. You know, this is terrible, man. It's beyond a belief, of course, to me, that anybody would devote even a skerrick, an iota of their time seriously. I mean, and I mean seriously, as in like your wife needs your help in the kitchen or something like that, and you'd rather just watch the sport. I think that there's something inherently wrong with you. You know, to get so worked up as some people do, to sit glued, you know, every single footfall of this person carrying this leather ball is absolutely important to my frickin' existence at this particular point in time, and if anybody interrupts it, I am going to bottle them. There's so much violence when you talk about... Yeah, seriously, I pulled security at a rugby game. Somebody threw a three-quarter full can of beer, and it hit me right in the collarbone. And it seriously, they must have thrown it like a clean 50 metres out of the stands. It's unbelievable. These people are ruthless, man. Seriously. pull security at Subway in Dunedin. I got beaten up by two girls and their boyfriends. It's ruthless out there, man. People love their sport and they love to smack people up, bro. It's just out of control. I can't believe it. Why devote yourself and why hurt other people as a result of said festivities? It's not funny. Well, of course, we're not talking about the majority of them here. We're talking about the small minority of drunk fools who probably just don't smoke enough weed in their life, who decide that it's a great idea to go looking for a fight because they're pissed as. All right, that's all it is. And, of course, alcohol advertising is all over the games. Look, one time I was sitting down and I watched a game that was uninterrupted, had absolutely no commercial breaks, and I counted not less than 84 commercials during the game. Okay? They're all over the place, man. All over the stands, all over the people's clothing, and everywhere, man. These are just basically massive corporate spectacles. The modern-day equivalent, a watered-down version of gladiatorial combat. And the only reason why they had massive gladiator games in Rome was to keep the people distracted with entertainment while the government stole everything out from under them, which is incidentally what's going to happen with the Rugby World Cup. Join the dots, man. Seriously. If you were serious about sport, then you should consider protesting against it. You know? Get corporate control out of our sport. You know? People should be able to exercise, have fun games without the huge cost to your infrastructure and to your nation as a whole to promote something that ultimately is of little consequence and is merely an entertainment spectacle. It doesn't need the attention that it can. In the news, in New Zealand, we have a 1 hour news segment every night, and at least 25 minutes of that is sports news. Okay? There's this much going on in the world and this much sport. It doesn't stack up, in my opinion, in terms of the interest or whatever. Because on the other channels, you know, you got RT or something. I mean, there's something about New Zealanders, I don't know, which is mad for sport. Love cricket, love rugby, love canoeing, love killing each other with tyre hards, whatever. it's just a real sport-ridden country. And I think every country, come to think of it, probably is. You know, the UK people have got their soccer, and the Americans have got their American football, man. And it's just so fabulous that people can devote that much time globally to something that is basically just a huge distraction and is used to suck resources out of the countries where their events take place. Okay? It's interesting that the Soccer World Cup Federation is called FIFA, because they're going to FIFA off with your profits, baby. Oh, yes, they are. And they're probably going to take a few bribes too. Goodness sake. How many times do I have to, I don't know, try and get to grips with the concept of caring about something that's of little consequence? I don't think I ever will really care about it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and I'll be right back after this very short break. I have a million.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are a-changing. again.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest now joins me from Ecuador. It's Richard Sauder. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, sir.
Damn, I'm good. Welcome to the show, mate. I'd love it if you could introduce yourself to me, because honestly, I have no idea who you are. Listeners tell me to get people on because they're frickin' fabulous, and I do it.
Well, Vinny, I'm an independent author and investigator, perhaps best well-known for my research on underground and underwater bases and tunnels. I began speaking and publishing about this, I guess, for the first time back in 1992, so almost 20 years ago. And since that time, I've published numerous articles in magazines and also to the Internet on that topic and other topics. I've also published a number of books that have been well-received having to do with the topic of underground and underwater bases and tunnels. I also have a book entitled Kundalini Tales that came out about 10 years ago or so, 11 or 12 years actually, and I have one other book entitled The Richard Sauder Briefing that came out last year, last spring, that deals with the global cover-up of just about everything that matters, everything that is of consequence to the human race and to this planet and our joint experience or sojourn on it. And also, I deal with, very briefly at the end of the book, with what we can do about it. I essentially see the need for a global uprising, a massive uprising. That's uprising, UPWISING, an uprising of the human race. And essentially, a lot of humans, millions and millions of us, need to simultaneously uprise. And if we don't, I'm afraid we may be toast, Vinny.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. After all, the people who build all these tunnels and all these bases, it is my wager that they'd rather kill us all off and destroy the Earth and live underground and then come out later than lose control of it completely.
Yeah, I couldn't really speak for them because I have never been on the inside of any of these programs. I have never worked for any type of agency involved in these activities in any way. So I don't have direct knowledge. What I have is information that has been related to me by a fairly large number of individuals over the years. Surprisingly, large number of people have spoken to me. And also my extensive documentary and archival research, which I've carried out over a period of many years. I found a great deal of evidence, much of it very highly informative and interesting. And while it's clear that this massive civil engineering and marine engineering project has been ongoing for decades, the motivations in all cases are not as clear. I don't know, but I suspect that some of the people, perhaps many of them who are involved, especially at the highest levels with these projects, are psychopaths and do not have the same human feelings and sensibilities as say, an ordinary human being who has real human feelings of empathy, compassion, sympathy, those types of things. Their calculus of what matters is greatly different from that of the average human being. The milieu that they move in, milieu in terms of their professional circles and social circles, are very different from that of the average human being. So I don't really know what all of their motivations are. And they're not publicly really announcing them. However, you can, I think, to a certain extent, extrapolate from some of the public policies that we do see and make some reasonably educated guesses as to what the motivations are and what the agenda is behind at least some of these facilities.
So let's talk about the agenda, okay? What based on your knowledge, your research, which is quite extensive, what's your expert opinion? What's the reason they have all these tunnels and bases all built up?
Well, I think that the reasons are several, and I would refer your listeners to my latest blog posting. I believe you've linked my blog on your website. Have you, Vinny?
I'm not sure. I mean, well, I've got a lot of contributors.
Well, let me give it over the air then. My blog is eventhorizonchronicle.blogspot.com. Let me repeat that. eventhorizonchronicle.blogspot.com. And my latest blog posting is entitled Way Down Beneath the Moonless Mountains. And it has to do with the fact that during my research, I ran across some documentation that showed the United States Navy had some interest in a chain of undersea mounts in the mid-Pacific Ocean. And these seamounts are called the Moonless Mountains. And, of course, at very great depth in the ocean, everything is completely dark. So if you are talking about seamounts that are beneath thousands of feet of seawater, indeed they would be in perpetual darkness. The moon would never shine down there. So they would indeed be aptly described as the Moonless Mountains. Well, the United States Navy had some interest or was thinking about putting a manned undersea base inside these mountains, thousands of feet underwater. So that's the title of that blog post. Now, in this case, the Navy had plans for even berthing not just the personnel that would man these undersea facilities, but also the families. I found documentation that discussed actually putting family units down in these bases. And, of course, that raises the question as to whether this has been done. Do we now have a resident undersea and or underground population that may be into its second or even third generation by this point?
Wow.
Where they live and work undersea and underground. Now, I can't answer that question, but it occurs to me because that issue was raised in some of the United States documentation that I looked at. So as for the purposes that I've seen, in the case of the undersea bases, they would have a number of possible uses that I have seen, sonar stations for the United States Navy, manned sonar stations, undersea and in mid-ocean. That's one possibility. Submarine bases. Undersea submarine bases where the submarines would actually go into large bases beneath the seafloor in mid-ocean, and the submarines and the crews would be berthed there. Now, understand the technology does exist to do this and has existed for about 50 years. Another possibility is to put nuclear missile bases actually beneath the seafloor in mid-ocean and put nuclear missile silos down in the seafloor. I also saw this discussed in the literature. Another possibility is to create undersea mines. Well, it could be for anything, for uranium, for gold. They could be for drilling, for petroleum, for various minerals, including petrochemicals. So that's another possibility.
Do you think perhaps there's a possibility that they may not be entirely human?
Well, that was what I was getting ready to say. You took the words out of my mouth, Vinny. One of the things that has popped up a lot in so-called UFO literature or in ufology is many accounts of people being taken to undersea bases where they saw either so-called aliens or extraterrestrials, or aliens and extraterrestrials working along with military personnel, in this case, United States military personnel. So I take these stories seriously. I think that that may be happening. And, of course, other possibilities for undersea bases would be clandestine narcotics warehouses that could be used by organized crime or by government agencies such as the American CIA, for example. Another, other possibilities would be secret corporate headquarters. I have been given some information that indicates corporate activity undersea, and there are a number of large corporations, including especially some of the large civil engineering firms, that certainly have the technological expertise and the money and the trained personnel to create manned undersea bases down in the bedrock beneath the seafloor. And this technology has existed for decades.
It's straight up out of a James Bond film.
Oh, it's right out of a science fiction scenario. Yes, it's right out of a science fiction scenario, and there may be other possibility as well. I mean, you use your own imagination and run with it, because I've thrown out some of the things that I have seen discussed in the literature, in the military literature, and in the government think tank literature, and also in the industrial literature pertaining to undersea and marine subsea floor engineering. Now, in terms of facilities on land that would be underground, well, I've seen all kinds of reasons for them, including weapons, storage, and development. This could be for conventional weapons and nuclear weapons. Also, administrative facilities, both for civil government, for the military, and for corporate organizations and religious organizations as well. There are some religious facilities underground. The Mormons and the Roman Catholics come to mind, also the Scientologists. There are also emergency command, control, and communication facilities underground, both for civilian government and military agencies.
Let me say, there are, if I could summarize, basically what we're talking about is the power centers of every single major corporation, organization that has international influence and scope probably has facilities of their own very safe.
I would assume that, and I would assume that some of them also have undersea facilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, then how long has this network been there? I mean, is there any evidence of it being an ancient tunnel network that's simply been revived?
Yes, but that information is anecdotal in terms of the ancient underground tunnels and installations. I have been told anecdotally and have read some anecdotal accounts here and there of alleged underground bases and underground tunnels from thousands, even tens of thousands, or even times more ancient than that, thousands of years ago. But I don't have any hard documentation of that. If that exists, and that information is very closely held, but I can tell you, in terms of the more modern facilities, starting in World War II, or actually before World War II, and continuing down to the present day, there has been a major underground construction campaign. It has never stopped. It's been continuous for the last 70 years, basically. And there have just been large resources lavished on this by corporations, by military agencies, by civil government agencies, and also by other organizations, such as some religious organizations. And I assume that there may be other organizations and even wealthy individuals who have conducted their own underground excavation and construction of facilities.
A thought occurs to me. there's been an awful lot of money stolen out of the economy, an awful lot of money borrowed by major corporations, by governments, and a lot of money being spent on research operations, and a lot of money being illegally and untraceably obtained by intelligence organizations through the drug trade. And so I think that, well, this is a conspiracy theory on my part. I don't have any evidence to back me up. But all of that extra money that's all been created, where's it gone? This is one area.
Yes, I agree completely, Vinny. And in fact, there has been some good research done on that. Catherine Halston Fitz, for example, at Solari.com, has shown that there are trillions of dollars that have been sucked out of the federal budget of the United States of America. And, of course, as you observe, in the last 2 or 3 years, trillions of dollars have been sucked out of, well, out of the pockets of the taxpayers by the shenanigans of Wall Street and the United States federal government and other major governments.
And we'll be getting into more of the details after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Meanwhile, at the Legion of Doom, Vinny Eastwood and Richard Sauter were having a conversation about the real Legion of Doom, the New World Order. Welcome back, Richard.
Thank you, Vinny.
Now,
let me say that you're absolutely right about all of this money by the trillions of dollars being siphoned off into secret places, secret programs, and secret accounts. There's absolutely a frantic effort by various power factions on this planet to consolidate their positions in every way, in any way that they can, in this time of furious change that is upon us. They're aware that tremendous change has begun and will continue in the coming years, and they've made extensive preparations of many kinds, and underground and underwater bases and tunnels of many different varieties are certainly part of that scenario.
When we talk about that scenario, they're talking about protecting themselves basically forever against any kind of uprising, because, you know, I'm sure that any entry into these bases would have the highest of all kinds of security, and there's no freaking way they could be, directly assaulted or anything, is there?
Well, not easily. I would never say never, but you're right. The security measures for these facilities are very extreme. However, when these people go inside, can they be sure that everyone that's in there with them is loyal to them? I don't know, Vinny.
Well, there's a famous saying, there's no way to protect yourself from an inside job.
No, not even they can protect themselves against that. The specialists in inside jobs, you know, there's no honor among thieves. There's no honor among psychopaths. So if all the psychopaths go up and go and lock themselves up together, either underground or undersea, how will they be able to trust one another? In fact, they won't be able to trust one another. And so I would think that would be an extremely uncertain environment in which to live. Nonetheless, I'm sure that there are some of the so-called ruling elite, maybe many of them, who indeed have hideaway bunkers that they hope to escape to if they need to, or perceive that they need to. However, I think that their plans will be thwarted. I think what's coming on this planet will be so overwhelming for all of us, including for them, that most, if not many, and perhaps all of their plans will be turned all helter-skelter and not turn out at all the way that they think that they will.
Yeah, I think the elite need to read the how-to book. It's called Want to Lock Yourself Underground with Liars, Thieves, Murderers, and Rapists? I can't think of a worse future, you know?
Nonetheless, that's what they're doing. And there are many You know, one of my sources who contacted me a few years back introduced himself by saying there are many secret underground bases and thousands of people work in them. Of course, this was no surprise to me. The only question is not whether there are secret underground bases and whether there are thousands of people working in them. The question is how many secret underground bases there are and how many thousands of people are working in them. And certainly the numbers are very large in both cases. I don't know of any other than to tell you that we're living in a dream world. We really at this point have two societies, more or less living beside each other or one on top of the other on this planet. We have kind of a parallel, high-tech, very compartmentalized, very secretive, highly stealthy, extremely lavishly well-funded. We have that group who hold them back aside from the so-called great unwashed masses. But we really do have these two societies existing parallel on this planet, this solution, which is there and which dovetails with the world that you and I live in many ways, on many levels, but it doesn't in a real sneaky, underhanded, kind of furtive, criminal kind of way that it's dysfunctional. What can I say? But there it is. There you go.
Great. So we're all the big dysfunctional human family with the crazy parents, and we're just the kids that are trying to survive this reign of terror before we can, get out into the real world.
Yes, and with the really weird, strange, extremely stealthy, secretive branch of the family, not living in the basement, but they've actually carved out huge caverns beneath the basement. And we really don't see them, but we hear rumors of their existence down there from time to time, and they hold themselves apart from us to the extent that they can, and yet they need us. I mean, it's just dysfunctional as all hell, Vinny.
I mean, they're kind of like Bruce Wayne's family, man, you know, the Batcave and all of that kind of stuff. It's comical. You know, have you ever noticed that reality is almost exactly like comic books?
It is, but they're stealing us blind. They're lying to us. They are have essentially sacrificed us and our world in order to develop theirs. And there's so many things that they have done and that they've discovered that could benefit humanity and that would really help the planet a lot. And yet they're holding that back. So they have a strong psychopathic streak. We have to count on at least some of these people having a humane or human impulse in them somewhere. They really owe it to us. They're related to us. They are, like it or not, they are part of the human family on this planet. My understanding is on other planets in the solar system, such as the Moon and Mars and in orbit around the Earth, they owe it to us to come clean with us. To be honest, to be open and forthright, because if they don't, the end of these dysfunctional family relationships never end well, Vinny. And so if they want a happy ending, they're going to have to start playing nice with the rest of us. And the way you play nice is by being honest and fair.
That's right.
That's simple.
This is the thing. I mean, they've collapsed the world to save themselves, right? But interestingly enough, they wouldn't have had to save themselves if they hadn't collapsed the world in the first place.
Kind of thing.
They'd still just be fine. And instead of sharing their wealth to save the world, right? And I for one, if anybody betrays them, like at the highest levels or something, goes out and comes out and says, "Yes, I've murdered, I've killed, I've raped, I've destroyed countries and all of that," and I want forgiveness and amnesty, I'd give it to them because of the immense amount of damage they could do to the rest of them. Because as soon as you realize that you've done something wrong and you want forgiveness, you want salvation, and you're willing to make up for it, I think there's some use for you now.
Yeah. Well, you know, there have been the fellow who wrote the book, the Economic Hitman book, I forget his name right now, and then There's another character,
Richard Pearl.
John Stock. Pardon me?
Was it Richard Pearl, was it, or something? Oh, I forget.
No.
Anyway, economic hitman. Go on.
But anyway, the ex-CIA agent, John Stockwell, who's written a series of books also about the dirty work, the scummy things he did for the CIA, and he thought better of it. In fact, he felt terrible about it and has come clean about what he did for the CIA and how terrible it was. So some of these people do have second thoughts, and some of them do have a conscience that they find somewhere in spite of everything and regret what they have done.
John Perkins. John Perkins is his name.
Yes, John Perkins. Yes, and so he's written two or three books, and John Stockwell has as well. So there are a bare handful of these types of individuals who have come forward. And, you know, for John Perkins and John Stockwell, they do seem contrite. They do seem genuinely to regret what they've done and to be sorrowful about it and to want to make amends and to want to do better. And, yes, for individuals like that, I'm prepared to say, you know what, you messed up. What you did was pure evil, but you've seen the error of your ways, and you want to rejoin the human race and at least try to make right some of what you've done wrong. I'm prepared, in that case, to live and let live. But the problem here, Vinny, is that 99% of them are not prepared to do that.
Well, if even 1% of them were to say blow themselves up in a room of an underground base and let the water or something like that, there's untold damage they can do. Okay, so it's not a matter of numbers, and it never has been. I mean, as the New World Order has facilitated, it becomes apparent that you can accomplish a lot with a very small, well-organized bunch of people than you can with a horde of unruly masses.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't say any more about that other than that the world situation is very complex. There are many, many factions involved. Many different agendas and agencies, and the evidence that I've seen, the best evidence that I've seen, strongly indicates that we are not home alone and never have been. There are other factions involved on, above, and beneath the surface of this planet, and these factions are from other times, other places, other spaces, other dimensions. For whatever reason, they have a strong interest in the Earth and in the human race, and either controlling the human race or helping the human race in some cases. But but I have accepted that they are here. And I would point out that those who are interested in reading my writings should please go to my blog, eventhorizonchronicle.blogspot.com.
Richard Souder, ladies and gentlemen, fabulous to have you on. Thank you very much, Richard, and we'll have you on again sometime, to be sure. Thanks, mate.